Hi, this is Dr. Frankie of Little Gay Book, and I'm a professional matchmaker and relationship coach. And I want to wish this show is so gay a happy 200th episode. Why be gay when you can be so gay?
This is Will Clark, host of the Will Clark Show, featuring Porno Bingo and future mayor of New York City. And I'm wishing this show is so gay a happy 200th episode. Why be merely gay when you can be so gay?
Hi, this is Jimmy Nguyen. I'm a lawyer, diversity advocate, and media commentator at JimmyNguyen.com. I've been lucky to be invited as a guest on This Show Is So Gay a number of times. Every time I come on to speak with Ken Schneck, it's a total blast and a total win. I want to wish This Show Is So Gay a happy 200th episode. Can you believe it? 200 episodes of helping people realize why be gay when you can be so gay. Seriously, folks, Ken's done a fantastic job speaking up on behalf of the LGBT community and helping people realize that we all should shine who we are completely, fully, inside and out. It's that speaking up and the platform he provides that is a total win. Congratulations, Ken, and This Show Is So Gay.
Hey there, everybody. It is Thursday, January 31st, 2013. And as you can tell from those testimonials you just heard, you are listening to the 200th episode of This Show Is So Gay. I'm your host, as always, Ken Schneck. You can, of course, get in touch with us by dropping us an email, send it on over to ken@thisshowissogay.com. Stroll on over to thisshowissogay.com to learn all about the fun things happening with our little gay radio show that could. And of course, go to the Facebook, like us, because we sure as heck like you. What an incredible 200th episode we have for you coming your way. So we have to get things started with our first ultra special guest called the Empress of the Unexpected by NPR. Singer-songwriter Susan Werner has a special place in our This Show Is So Gay hearts, which I will tell you about in just a few. She's got just a freaking ton of albums. I think like 50 or 60, Susan. I counted. She puts on one
not
of the...
200.
Soon. By the end of the week. She puts on one of just the best live shows you've ever seen. And honestly, in a moment of sincerity, she has one of the most inspiring spirits I have ever encountered in my life. For our 200th episode, it gives me great pleasure to say, Susan Werner, welcome to This Show Is So Gay.
And happy 200th episode.
Well, thank you. Now, here's the thing that people perhaps do not know. What I technically should be saying is, Susan Werner, welcome back to This Show Is So Gay.
Now, it's nice to be back.
Well, if people were to go to our website, Susan, they would say, well, wait a second, I don't see Susan Werner episode. That's because what people might not know, you were actually on our second episode, but that's when we didn't understand how to use the equipment. So it got ruined. It's our lost episode. So technically, welcome back, but this is the first time people are hearing you on our show.
Well, and thank you for having me back, sort of.
4 years ago, October 8th.
You know, I remember visiting you, and I love seeing you and talking with you, and thank you for including me today. Congratulations on the long-running history of your show now.
Well, thank you.
And it's a great new year, and how many more episodes are you going to have? I mean, you already had 200. You must be like running a marathon at mile 20. They start holding out tangerines for you and, you know, sugar boosters and stuff.
Rainbow drinks.
Plan to go? Yeah.
My goal is to get to 202, so let's take it from there.
There you go, right? Your expectations are modest.
Exactly. Now, I was telling people, everyone was saying, well, who's going to be on your 200th episode? And I said, well, I'm going to have a couple people, and one of them is Susan Werner. And for people who don't yet know you, which I don't understand, but I guess there's some people who don't know you, they asked, oh, well, what genre of music? To which I had to say, well, that's a very interesting question. And then I would move on to somebody else. How would you answer that?
You know, I just go project by project. So I had this project in 2004 called I Can't Be New, which was Great American Songbook, or Pretty Good American Songbook type songs. Since I wrote them, they're just good. They're not great. I mean, you have to be Cole Porter or Gershwin or dead to write Great American Songbook songs. And then 2007 was Agnostic Gospel. So again, you know, sort of odd category unto itself. And now I'm working on a project called Hayseed, which is all songs about agriculture, farming, food, and the people who love agriculture, farmers, and feeding farmers, and local eating, et cetera, et cetera. And someone called this project, because there's a song called Herbicides Made Me Gay, someone called this project Queergrass. So you know, there's just not enough genres to stir into the soup in one career, I guess, so I keep making up new ones.
I feel that Herbicides Made Me Gay could be like our show's anthem.
Well, I look forward to your response when you get to hear it. We're just finishing it up now, and yeah, this song, I guess, needed writing. I mean, I guess it was hell to me to write it, but it seems like someone should have got to it before me, but there it is.
Well, let me tell everyone, I have to, and I told you this, I said it on our second episode, but that was so long ago and nobody's ever heard it except those who tuned in live. My first Susan Werner exposure. So this was back when, I don't know if you remember me telling this, I had the rule that I would determine if I liked the artist by the fifth song on their CD. Do you remember this? So,
And it's smart. It's smart to have some kind of gatekeeping.
That's what it was. Because it was Tori Amos, the fifth song was Winter, and Indigo Girls, Love Will Come to You. And I'm like, all right. So someone gave me, it was actually from my college. They gave me your CD. They gave me Last of the Good Straight Girls to review. And I said, all right, well, let me see what the fifth song is. And the fifth song, do you know the fifth song on Last of the Good Straight Girls?
No one here but me.
Obsessed. From the first playing of, and we're going to play it this episode, No One Here But Me, obsessed. And I knew, okay, I am committed to this woman for life. And then I got to meet you, and that was all great. Tell everyone about No One Here But Me.
There was a drum track. It was a drum loop. And once my producer and I figured that out, we're like, that's a song. What song is that? That's a song. What song is that? And I was going through this breakup. You know, everyone goes through a breakup on the first record. And I said, there needs to be an anthem. You have to have an anthem on every record. And this anthem is, there's no one here but me. I got to do it. Whatever happiness I'm going to give myself, I have to do it. And so anyone who found themselves in a similar space when they heard the record felt like that song became some kind of fight song for their own individual happiness.
Yeah.
And maybe it spoke to you in the same way. I don't know, but
very much so.
That's what I recall of that song.
Now we should clarify for people, Last of the Good Straight Girls, a queer track or no?
I think, I was trying to tell the story of a friend of mine from Philadelphia who, had a series of, episodes and transformations. And so I wrote the song, trying to tell her story. And no, it really wasn't my story. It was her story. And we got so many questions about the song. We're like, I think it must mean something bigger to a whole lot of people.
Oh, yeah.
And it remains sort of this enigmatic paperweight you put in the middle of the desk and see what everybody has to say about it. Almost like the magic eight ball or something. Just turn it up and see what it says to people.
Nice.
And for people. And it's turned out to be very powerful for many different people for many different reasons.
Oh, yeah. Now, I checked. You have rabid gay fans. Are you aware that you have rabid gay fans?
Well, I haven't had the, you know, I haven't had to have the series of shots yet. So, no, I'm...
You just wait. You just wait. Clearly you haven't been going to Northampton enough because I think it could happen there. There is foaming at the mouth.
I wrote a half song about Northampton once called The Handsome. I've been there once. I'm going back again for the handsome women and the beautiful men. That's my song about Northampton. I should have finished this, but.
I feel it's done. I feel you could get the crowdsource funding together. I think it's ready to go. I'm just saying right now, I'm working on cover art already for the CD jacket. So why do you think, what is it about Susan Werner? You can even do it in the third person if you need to. Do you think that appeals to your rabid gay fans?
You know, I think it has something to do with, well, I remember reading this study that children raised by gay parents were more verbal than other kids. I remember reading that in the studies, like 3 or 4 years ago. And I think that for those of us that take great time and care to put our words together as lyricists, this seems to have some kind of, I guess my songs seem to have some special appeal.
Yeah.
Which I'm really grateful for. Look, I'm grateful for anybody who likes my music. Don't kid yourself, right? Every single person who likes my music, I love you. But the songs seem to be especially lyrically oriented and rewarding if you listen to and enjoy lyrics. That may have something to do with it.
Yeah.
Especially gay guys who sing along with the lyrics to very specific tunes. Very specific, yes, show tunes. I mean, knowing every single word. If you start, right, even with an old chestnut like Chicks and Ducks and Geese, I mean, hello. Do you know the Better Scurry or you don't know the Better Scurry? Well, some people know the Better Scurry and some people don't know that the next line is Better Scurry.
Not people I associate with, I'll tell you that right now. I have standards.
I think it has something to do with the lyrics and the appeal of the lyrics and the specificity of the lyrics. See, I can't even get that word out. But, you know, again,
yeah.
Our gay guy friends, they could finish that word specificity.
Well, now, here's my question. Now, I have not asked you this before, and this is a question that has oft been asked of the Indigo Girls and one that I asked them when they were on the show. I would put out there the theory, and I, of course, welcome your response, and you can disagree with me, that your lyrics have gotten progressively more queer-friendly. Or is that just something that I am interpreting? I look at some of the songs on The Beehive, and maybe, again, maybe that's kicking the beehive. Maybe that's the way I'm interpreting them. But I look at Red Dress, I look at My Different Son, and I feel like, oh, this is much more overtly queer-friendly. Am I wrong? Mm-hmm.
No, I think there is some truth to that. I think it has something to do, though, with the experiences I'm probably having in my own life as a, you know, they talk about the Kinsey scale. You know, some of us are kind of 3.5, 4, 4.5, right? And so it has something to do with what you're doing at the time and what you're, well, let's be frank, I mean, who you're with at
right.
the time and how free even the society around you is to let you speak as yourself and how much courage you feel you have to speak entirely as yourself. It's a combination of all of those things.
Yeah.
And now that I have, as you'll hear in the Herbicide song, you know, much prefer a same-sex mate, with the hee-haw emphasis on mate.
as yeah, naturally it would be.
Emphasize your diss song. I think that the when you're living with a same-sex mate, I think that tends to frame the window in which you
yeah.
view the world.
There's
no doubt about it.
There you go. Talk to me about My Different Son, which I just mentioned. I have seen this has been happily co-opted by PFLAG groups across the country.
Hmm.
Did you see that coming?
News to me. No, that's news to me, and I'm honored by it. There are many different people who see themselves, their children, their nephews in this song, and with a variety of ways that set the child aside from, apart maybe is a better word, set their child apart from their peers in a way that is challenging and in a way that takes creativity
yeah.
on the part of the child and on the part of the parents to make room for this child in the world. The song has certainly really moved me by the number of parents who have come up to me and said, this song really has helped me get through some difficult moments.
Yeah.
Thank you for it. Parents will move heaven and earth, mountains and interstates and oceans to help their child in the world. It is the greatest love on earth, and without trying to sound like a cliche, but parents really love their kids.
Yeah.
And they really define their lives by their kids in ways they can't even begin to tell you. And a song like this reveals that bond.
I think it's a rallying cry. I find My Different Son to be a rallying cry in just in really the most beautiful way.
Thank you. Thank you for saying that.
Yeah. Now, there is Susan Werner, the woman that you can pop into your CD or listen, you know, CD player or listen on your iPod. I feel that Susan Werner, the live experience, that's a whole different animal.
Yeah, I perform constantly and record only when I have to. I mean, really, if I never had to make a record, I could care less. I mean, I just want to do shows. That's it. Just let me do the show. Give me 100, 200 people in a small room and, in a bar on either side of the room. And it's cabaret, really. That's what I love doing is a small show for a small group of people, and we're going to have a great time tonight. I feel like a nightclub performer.
Yeah.
That's, That to me is very rewarding, when I can see every person in the room. I can see them with the partner that they brought in with them that night, and you sing a love song and they cuddle in close. You sing a thoughtful song and you see them, see the slideshow of their own lives as you sing the lyrics. That is so rewarding to me, inspiring to me. It gives me great energy. I'd rather do two shows a night for, you know, seven nights, or six nights, well, give me a day off, right?
Right.
two shows a night, six nights a week in a 100-seat room than one show with 1,200 people. Honest to God, I love the little rooms and the feeling of giving a show that really matters to the people that came, that really connects with them. I'm a cabaret singer. I am.
Well, I have to tell folks, you perform at the Iron Horse in Northampton.
Yeah.
And when I last saw you, I'm sitting, you know, there are tables kind of all over the place, and whoever introduced you, and now Susan Werner, and you come up through the aisle, and you stopped and you saw me, and you paused, and you said, "Ken Schneck, don't you leave after the show? Let's talk." And, okay, there were two things happening at the same time. Actually, there were three things happening at the same time. Number one, I had my little Elvis moment of, like, she knows me. Okay, so that was one. Two, whatever. Two, I thought, I could hear my mom in my head saying, she should not be stopping at tables. She needs to be focused right now. And three, I was a little worried. I was a little worried. And three, people gave me looks. And there were different types of looks. Some were, ooh, who's that? And others were like, ugh, who's that? You know, so it was there was a lot going on in your stopping at my table.
Well, I'll be happy to stop at your table anytime. And look, it all beats staying at home and sitting on your couch and, you know, reading on your iPad. I mean, to sit in a room with other people and to feel other people having an opinion about what's going on, I'm sorry. I mean, yes, you can be tweeting away or Facebooking away, but you can't really feel, right, the stink eye when someone looks at you like, what the hell is that, right?
Right.
Or envy. You can't really feel envy on Facebook. You can't really feel it. Someone can write something nasty, but it doesn't feel the same as when you're in a room with other people with drinks in their hand, and they're like 5 feet away, and they're like, who the hell do you think you are?
Right.
There's no equivalent for feeling shame, envy, resentment, jealousy in person.
Yeah, but one of the things about your show, because let's take this to the next step, one of the things about your shows is that there is a degree to which you empower your audience, because there's really a dialogue going on between you, the performer, and the audience. And I felt like I saw a glimpse at one of your shows of thinking, ooh, I think she empowered that guy a little too far, because he probably should stop talking to her. Does that happen often?
Yeah, right? Yeah, so if I invite the audience to give the show with me, sometimes I'm like, okay, give me the show back. Give it back, now drop it.
Let's be clear about who paid who now, sir. That's what I was thinking.
But, you know, a good night, and yeah, on a good night, and most of my nights really are good nights. The audience gives as good a show as I do. So don't be stupid. I don't have to do all the heavy lifting myself. Why would I? I mean,
right.
If the audience is going to bring the show with them, you know, take their effort and push it up to a whole nother higher level. I like being in front of people, and it comes easily to me. I have an older brother who's a stand-up comic. I have another brother who's a performing drag queen. I mean, my entire family somehow, maybe the herbicide, but we're all wired somehow to be in front of people.
I would love to see a drag queen introduce you.
Well, I welcome that. Look, next time I do Northampton or someplace, you know, a show that you can come to, let's do that.
Let's do it.
We can do that. We can make that happen.
Now, my other favorite Susan Werner live moment was you performed at Marlboro College, where I'm currently employed. We'll see how much longer. And one of your songs, which I think you know, Movie of My Life, which is entertaining, to say the least. And there is a part in the song, and then we'll let folks go download it and pay for it. And don't you know, bootleg it, because we like...
You can find it on YouTube. For
yeah, or on YouTube. But we like when they pay and you get money. So... there is a part of the song where you perhaps put on a bit of a different voice, and a woman in the audience. Now, I'm not saying, Susan Werner, that I was not entertained and am not always entertained by that moment in the song. Obviously, my level of entertainment did not match this particular woman's, who was laughing so hard for so long that you just had to stop the whole damn song. Because... It was one of those really raucous laughters. There was no point in moving on to the rest of the song until this woman was done. The whole audience was in stitches. It was one of the most beautiful live moments.
Well, but if the audience is giving a better show than you, sit down and watch.
Yeah.
Honestly. So, Northampton's one of those places where that tends to happen.
That tends to happen. Now, you perform with some regularity with Miss Trina Hamlin.
I do. She's fabulous, of course.
I don't even understand. I think that she is an example of genetic cloning if you close your eyes, but it turns out she's one person doing all that at the same time.
Yeah, she's really a singular musical talent, playing harmonica and percussion and kick drum and snare and all of this going on at once. And then she can also play the guitar amazingly well, piano amazingly well. She's an example of a child that was simply left home alone too much in Minnesota. and she is just a warm, wonderful, fantastic presence in the room. And, you know, I'm over there being all wry and sort of, I don't know, like, you know, Elaine Stitch at midlife. And, you know, Trina's over there laughing and having a wonderful warm time, and you know, she's like kindness insurance, because otherwise I might threaten to get a bit too sour on the world. And Trina always makes sure that everybody knows, look, we're having fun and we're not here to hurt you. Because people, if left alone with me, people might think I am here to hurt you.
And you empower them to tell you, ouch, right there in the middle of the show, which is incredible.
right there in front of me. Yeah.
All right, so give us some process right now. You're in the studio recording.
I am, and I'm finishing something up, and I actually have to go run.
Yeah, we're gonna get you out there. So, when are we looking for Hayseed to be out there?
End of April.
Okay.
End of April, and I just have a sense that it's going to be. I kind of know already. I mean, we're getting all these inquiries from performing arts centers and community colleges and farmers markets. Especially, it's a big
yes.
Surprise. Farmers markets all across the country. Who want to be part of this tour, which is about organics, it's about food safety, and all with a great sense of humor. And I feel so excited that these songs are about a unique piece of subject matter. I mean, there's not really any love songs in it, other than a song called Bumper Crop about doing it in a car in the cornfield. but the album is made up of agriculture, food, farming, organics, and we'll be at lots of farmers markets and TACs on the same day, and we have so much good music to bring people. I look forward to seeing, really, I know already, much of the United States by November.
And let me tell you,
crazy schedule.
Brattleboro Farmers Market, one of the top 10 farmers markets in the country.
Have them call me now.
I'm going to do it. I could not even consider doing a 200th episode without going back to my second episode and having you back on. You have to know how much you inspire me, how much, I mean, look, I'm so grateful that I have the opportunity to speak to you and converse with you and communicate with you, but I actually don't talk to you every day, but I feel like I do, because it's hard for me to think of, you know, a week going by without hearing your music. It speaks to me in just the most inspiring way.
Thank you for saying that. And I do feel like we have something really special for people again this year. And I appreciate your support. And I wish I had more time to even talk.
No, you're good. SusanWerner.com, everybody. That's where you need to go. The crowdsource funding went in like 2 seconds, because that's how much we want to support what you do. Susan Werner, what an absolute pleasure. We can't wait to hear what's coming next.
Ken, thanks, honey. You have a great day. Thanks again.
Thanks, Susan.
Thanks, babe. Bye.
Comedy team, Dick and Dwayne.
What?
And Dwayne, don't you know what we're doing here?
What?
Ken Schneck emailed us and asked us if we'd like to record a message congratulating him on his 200th episode.
Who?
Of this show is... Ken Schneck.
Oh, yeah.
This show is so gay.
Yeah, yeah.
We've appeared on the show.
Before?
Because it's a great show.
Yeah, I know.
And it's a 200th episode.
Oh,
it's
yeah?
It's a nice thing to do, to say happy congratulations.
Well, then we should do it.
We'll say it.
Congratulations on your 200th episode.
That's right.
Hi, this is Eric Hyman, singer-songwriter and host of Trial and Eric. I just want to wish This Show Is So Gay a happy 200th episode. Why be gay when you can be so gay?
All right, folks, and we are back. Well, thank you, Dick and Dwayne, and thank you, Eric Hyman, for recording those messages honoring our 200th episode. You were just listening to There's No One Here But Me by Susan Werner, who, as you just heard in the first part of the show, was our first guest, but nobody ever heard that show because we didn't know how to record and we didn't know what we were doing. So with our 200th episode, we want you to also reconnect with our first actual guest that you can go back and listen to. Elizabeth Damon is an actor, a comedian, a host, and organizer, but you probably know her best as runner-up for the Miss Lower East Side 2004. Elizabeth Damon, welcome back to This Show Is So Gay.
Thank you. Oh, it's great to be back. Man, 200 episodes. Congratulations.
You were on episode 2.
That's crazy.
You were on episode 2, our first official guest. What do you remember of life back then? This was 2008.
Well, I was in a different relationship.
There you go.
I remember I was actually in a parking lot at a grocery store when we recorded that.
Look at that. Emotionally or actually?
Actually, both.
Okay.
I was in the parking lot of my heart, kind of waiting to go somewhere, and then I was literally in a parking lot of like a Key Food grocery store, probably buying pasta, some staple, you know.
Back then we called you Liz. We don't do that anymore.
Oh. What do you call me now?
We call you Elizabeth. That's what it says there on your Facebook page.
It does. It does. It's true. I was hoping you'd say, like, we call you Gertrude. because it's what we want to call you today. And I would be okay with it. I'm not too attached to my name. Call me Elizabeth. That's, you know, as I've gotten older, I am older than I was in 2008.
Me too.
Yeah. That's insane.
I know.
I've gotten older. I find that Elizabeth commands more respect.
There you go.
And I use it. But really, most people still, they call me Liz because it's faster.
I don't want to scare you, but we have known each other for about 13 years.
Oh, my gosh. That's amazing.
Isn't that crazy?
I kind of like that this is just, like in our lives, like when you get to be over how old we are.
Yeah, no, 29. We can tell people.
Exactly.
That's fine.
You know, you get to that point where suddenly relationships that almost feel new are now over 10 years old. Because my oldest relationships, of course, you know, like elementary school friends or high school friends, and those are one category. But then it's like, oh, yeah, I met this person. It doesn't feel like I met you that long ago.
Right.
But here we are.
Here we are. Well, we got to get your take on the biggest LGBT topics of the day. Kale, yay or nay?
I'm kale is a yay. I am making, I've been massaging some kale over here on my counter. That's how you prepare it. You've got to massage it.
I had no idea.
Oh, yeah, you do. You need sort of a shiatsu motion with some lemon to kind of break down those fibers and some salt. Delicious.
Now, have you tried the kale chips? Because I tried to make them, and that did not work.
All right, well, here's the thing. Did you cut out the stems? Because those really fibrous kale stems are what keep a kale chip from being pleasant in the mouth.
Okay. Yeah. I did not know that. I screwed that up.
Well, I didn't know either. That's how I found out.
Okay.
I made mistakes.
See, I see your method. You tried again. I gave up.
Yeah. Well, you know what? Now I'm just doing this massaging thing. I don't bake them anymore. Because it's a lot of like, you know, it's like a potato chip. You put it in your mouth, you chew twice, and then it's over. I don't like that kind of experience. It's too fast. I like a slow steady experience, you know. I like to chew and saliva gets released.
This is a family show, Elizabeth Damon. This is a family gay show. I don't know what show you think you're on. All right, so we're going to talk about your professional organizing because this is a really fun and exciting development. But first, are you performing? Are you working with comedy troupes? What are you working on in the gay world?
Right now, the last two major things that are worth noting, I was in a very small part in an awesome movie that you're going to have to just like sort of take a deep breath, and then you'll be able to ingest the title of this film.
On it.
It's called Codependent Lesbian Space Alien Seeks Same.
Okay.
That's the name of the film. It's a brilliant comedy, B-movie spoof by Madeline Olmec, and she's also a very prolific queer director. She's amazing. And this film actually went to Sundance.
Oh, fantastic.
And yeah, that was, I think, 2 years ago. It's not the newest thing in the world, but this is the biggest thing I've done in the last, probably since 2008. And I just have a very small part to play, an alien scientist.
As naturally you would.
Of course.
Okay.
And I have a bald cap and everything. I mean, it is sort of this B-movie spoof, so we look like aliens from B-movies, like those sort of V-shaped collars and bald heads. And anyway, it's hilarious. So that's something that happened.
Nice.
And then I have I don't know if I was doing this in 2000. I must have been. I've got this lesbian a cappella group.
Yes.
Lesbian Overtones.
Yes.
Still doing things. We don't perform quite as regularly as we used to, but we did just do a wedding in October. So, and it was a really awesome event. And so now if you want the Lesbian Overtones to sing at your wedding, we will do some lesbian a cappella for you.
Now,
if you want that.
How would you define lesbian a cappella?
Basically any lesbian music sung a cappella is how we define it. We do sort of gravitate to Indigo Girls and Melissa Etheridge and Anita Franco, a lot of the like music that we as lesbians were listening to intently in the mid 90s.
Right. Or for me last week.
Or last week, exactly. Oh yeah, we're still listening. But you know, we gravitated to these sort of power ballad lesbian songs.
What is your breakout number?
Oh man. I do a pretty intense rendition of Cyndi Lauper's True Colors.
Wow.
Yeah, I mean, it brings tears sometimes because I'm actually not a trained singer. I'm more of a performer. So the singing that I've ever done in my life has always been more about a comedic effect. I just sort of sing to make people laugh.
And that's quite the anthem.
Yes. Yeah, that's a beautiful. And you know, the very last, if you can imagine, the last line there is, you know, you're beautiful like a rainbow. And so when the rainbow comes, I pull a rainbow colored handkerchief out of my pocket slowly, and then I dance around with it.
It's almost literal.
Yeah, yeah.
I love it. And will you guys do, are you willing to do bar mitzvahs?
Oh, of course.
Okay.
Well, I mean, we'll do anything.
Okay.
If we get enough money to get there, you know, you got to get us there.
All right. We can get you there. We can get you there. Okay, but then you decided, you know what? I can organize things.
Yeah.
You decided I'm really good at organizing things, and you started your own company.
I did. You know, it's always a good time to start your own company.
Always. Always. Economy be damned.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. You know, adversity just brings opportunity, and I'd gotten to a point where I was curious if being an entrepreneur was something that would be interesting for me and if I would take to it well. And I was curious if I could sustain myself and what would life be like if I really ran my own schedule and was in control of that. And initially the idea was, if I am in control of all these things and I run my own business, then I can decide my performance schedule and I'll have more flexibility.
Nice.
Yeah, that was a nice idea. That is not how things work.
Did it not pan out that way?
No, it did not. Being an entrepreneur, I mean, if you want to grow a business or build a business, it is a full and a half time job. And I actually have two businesses now. So I run a company with my partner, and then I run my own company. And I am working on new material and hope to do more performing.
Great.
But it has been a big distraction.
Is there a gay connection to being a professional organizer?
That's a great question. I mean, no.
Okay.
No, there's not. I'm gay and I organize, and there are a few gay organizers out there. Most of the men who are professional organizers are gay.
Okay.
Not all of them, but many of them.
Many of them.
Not very many of them, but it's sort of like yeah, that could become a stereotype if people knew what professional organizers were, which most people don't. But if they eventually, I don't know, give us 20 years and there'll be a stereotype about that.
Well, I think we can do it in the next 3 weeks.
Okay.
I think you're on the cusp. I think you're on the cusp. Because let's get some professional organizing. Can we get some professional organizing advice from you?
Oh, sure.
All right. Let's just say that I have made a New Year's resolution to be more organized.
Uh-huh.
But I just find myself never really in the mood to organize.
I totally understand. And my first point here would be, you're just going too broad. What does that even mean, be more organized? Like, what is it? What do you lose? Are you losing your keys all the time? Are you feeling frazzled? If you can get more specific, tell me, what do you need to organize? Where are you suffering?
I feel like I have too many different things in too many different places. I'm not a hoarder. By no means am I a hoarder. But there's a lot of clutter here in all the different rooms in the apartment.
Aha, okay, that's better. So you've got maybe a few more objects than you have need for.
Exactly.
And you're never in the mood to organize. Well,
never.
Never. You might have to, first, let's put you on a bit of a scale. Is it really disrupting your quality of life?
It's a mild annoyance.
Okay. See, that might not be enough of a motivation for you to change anything. And if you don't have the motivation, there's nothing I can do.
Right.
Other than just come over and hang out with you and be like, hey, do you need help with this?
If you were to just make that offhand comment while you were here and I didn't bring it up, I cannot begin to tell you how much that would be guilt inducing and I would clean up in a heartbeat. I don't know if that's one of your techniques. But if you were to go over to people's places and without them even prompting, say, oh, do you need help here straightening up? I can tell you, you would get hired so much.
Well, and that is not at all how I would ever go to someone's house. I mean, this is what my general mode is. If it's not causing you suffering, if it's not keeping you from making appointments or spending time with your friends or enjoying your space, then don't stress out about it. Like, I mean, there is, it's just like, you know, when you go into a clothing store, there's 17,000 different sweaters. You don't need 17,000 different sweaters. And it's the same with your home. You don't need a million different bins. You just need to be with the clothing. You just need to be warm and comfortable, and your home should be warm and comfortable. And it's when things get out of control, you feel frustrated or upset or you don't know where anything is, then you start to make some changes. It sounds like if you've just got mild frustration, I wouldn't do anything. I'd go out and, go out for ice cream.
Honestly, I might just do that. But I would imagine that your friends who know that you're a professional organizer, have you noticed, since becoming a professional organizer, you get less invites to people's homes?
Yes, but I didn't ever make that connection.
I'm here to help. We're a self-help gay show as well.
Yes, I kind of just assumed that people thought I was boring, and so they didn't want to hang out with me. I didn't realize they were afraid of being judged.
Yes.
I had to go make some phone calls.
Yes. I checked with your friends. It's a fact. In 3 weeks, when the stereotype comes out, it will all be confirmed.
It will.
All right. Well, this is exciting because you're doing professional organizing and people really do need it. You know, it's one of those things where I would imagine that you're just helping people with perspective, as you just did for me. Like, I'm not feeling as intense right now to really tidy up.
Yeah, don't do it. Yes, it is nice to work in a field where you intersect with people who are they're going through transition. So.
Yeah.
They're adding a new member to their family, they're moving in with a partner, they're breaking up, they're moving into a bigger apartment, smaller apartment, et cetera. And to be able to, interface with people at those transition moments and make those transitions more simple is very satisfying. And it's fun to be a part of that. Yeah.
So where can folks go to learn more about your professional organizing and, hire you?
Oh, that would be great. I have a lovely website, and it is MakeSpaceNewYork.com. So it's all spelled out, MakeSpace, New York spelled out, NewYork.com.
And we will link to that. We will link to that. Now, I wish that you still were doing these green eye videos.
Oh, me too.
If folks have not seen, can they still find them online?
Yes. I think I have them. If not, I'll put them up tonight. They should be on my website. You'd have to look at my reel. You can't find them independently, but you can find them on my website.
Because for folks who have not seen, this is where Elizabeth Damon goes into your home, and after she maybe suggests you should tidy up, she then looks at really how green-friendly your apartment is. And at one point, and I said this back on the second episode ever of This Show Is So Gay, my favorite ever Liz Damon line is when you hold up that bottle and you say, see what this says here? Danger. You know what that means? Danger.
Oh, those were so much fun. I really wish that series had continued. And I did do, you can actually see that on my reel too, I did a pilot for a different production company for a show that was called Money in Your Pocket, which was going to be a show about changes you can make around your house that are both green and will save you money.
Nice.
But that never made it to the airwaves. But
all right.
I'm hoping to do some videos on my own to get those up, just about organizing and life stuff, and that'll be fun. But.
Well, we love these updates. Can we not let another 198 episodes go by before we get more updates from you?
I would love to not let that happen again. Right. I know. Every 4 years? Wow, it's like...
I know, it's crazy. It's crazy. Well, folks, if you need some organizing help, or you need some kale recipes, or a lesbian a cappella group for your upcoming bris, or maybe that of your nephew, please, we will link up for you and search out Elizabeth Damon, because she is one of our favorites. Liz, what a pleasure having you back on the show.
Oh, likewise. This was great.
Thanks, Liz.
Thank you. Congratulations.
Thank you.
Okay, bye.
Hi, this is Sharon Staple, and I'm the executive director at the New York City Anti-Violence Project. And I want to wish This Show Is So Gay a happy 200th episode. We are anti-violence and pro This Show Is So Gay.
All right, folks, and we are back. Well, back in November of 2008, we here at This Show Is So Gay got some serious street cred when we were joined by NPR's Ari Shapiro, who joined us for our 6th episode, and now he's back for episode number 200. Ari Shapiro.
Congratulations.
Thank you. Welcome back to This Show Is So Gay.
You still don't look a day over 6 episodes.
I get that a lot.
Now, it's really well.
When you joined us in 2008, this is the way that I tell the story. You were the justice correspondent for NPR. You appeared on our show, and then they promoted you. Is that the way it happened?
The way I tell the story is we were at a party, and our eyes locked from across the room, and the rest of the crowd disappeared. The music swelled. The room spinned.
I like your story better. Your story is so much better. But you did get a bit of a promotion, sir, did you not?
It is true that, I've now been covering the White House for almost 3 years.
And anything happening at the White House these days?
Well, you know, we have this big election, and now I'm off the campaign trail, back home mostly, and it's all about the second term. Guns, immigration, climate change, everything else.
Well, you know, a lot of big LGBT announcements have happened there in the White House briefing rooms. What stands out to you in the past 3 years when you danced a little, maybe danced a little jig inside?
You know, on LGBT stuff, the big thing we're looking ahead to right now is the Prop 8 and DOMA argument,
right,
which obviously it's out of President Obama's hands for the most part, though there's some question about whether his White House is going to file a brief in those cases or not, in the hands of the White House. It was really interesting during his inaugural speech when he made the comments about, you know, Seneca Falls, Selma, and Stonewall, and when he talked about our gay brothers and sisters, a lot of deserving legal recognition, just to sort of be there watching the Supreme Court justices behind him who are going to be deciding some of these issues. It felt perhaps like a not-so-subtle lobbying campaign aimed at them.
Right. To what degree can you influence things by just being there in the briefing room?
Oh, I don't really think I influence things by being in the briefing room so much. I mean, Besides, it's not President Obama doing the briefing, to Jay Carney, the press secretary,
right,
who, great and powerful though he may be, is not the President of the United States.
No, he is not. He is not. Well, two huge impacts you have had on my life since you first appeared on 2008. Number one, you introduced...
Oh, you can get antibiotics. It'll go away really quick.
So that should, I'll make that three big impacts that you've had on my life. So that was number one. Number two, you introduced me to the world of parkour, which I tried, and that did not go well.
Oh, no. Are you okay?
I'm emotionally scarred, but yes, physically I'm good. Is this something you still do?
Yeah, because I basically spent a year on a campaign trail with a presidential election, I no longer train parkour at the gym where I used to be going really regularly, but doing parkour intensely for the amount of time that I did taught me how to sort of do those exercises on my own wherever I might be. So I still do it, though I don't train it as religiously.
Okay. All right, because we get worried about you. We were worried about you back then, jumping on these rocks, and then I tried it.
No, it's really useful to escape if I'm ever being chased by ninjas or rabid tigers or
Carl Castle. I hear what you're saying. Now,
Carl Castle got a temper on him.
Now, I would almost argue the bigger effect you have had on my life was just casually mentioning while you were on our show a name that I knew from listening to NPR but did not fully appreciate until she has now appeared 5 times on our show in the past 5 years, 4+ years, Netta Ullaby.
Oh, she's wonderful. She's really, really great.
I'm obsessed with her.
Yeah, and rightfully so. She's quite magical.
Now, I will ask you the same question that Netta and I talk about all the time. How gay is NPR?
It's pretty damn gay. I mean... You know, on any given day, I'm not one to out colleagues, but you're going to hear a couple of our LGBT brethren reporting on one issue or another.
Okay.
At least. What does Netta think? How does she answer that question?
Oh, no, she agrees. It's pretty gay. She gave me, now maybe you can flesh this out a bit, she gave me different categories of lesbians who work there at NPR. Can you perhaps...
Oh, see, that's her area of expertise, is the lesbians. I tend to... leave that to her. I don't want to encroach on her territory. We have beats at NPR, you know, I'm the White House correspondent. So unofficially, I'm going to give her the lesbian beat.
So what are you going to take other than, you know, officially the White House?
My plate's pretty full as it is. I got to be honest. You know, unofficially, I'm happy to take any number of beats. But I'm pretty happy with what I got.
All right. But can you give us the breakdown, perhaps, of the gay men working in NPR? Are there different categories of men working there?
Well, the biggest category of all is men who, in any other workplace, would probably be, quote-unquote, obviously gay. But at NPR, they are actually just straight, married, public radio types. And there's a lot of those.
There's a lot of those. Okay.
Yeah, and the gay men tend to be, a little less noticeable than you might expect from some other walks of life.
Yeah, I hear you. I hear you. Now, do you have a sense, and I will tell you it's true because I know this because we hype your appearance on the show, you do have a sense that there is a large population of gays that's obsessed with you, right?
Obsessed is a strong word. I don't know about obsessed.
Idolize.
I don't have that sense.
Okay.
Although, you know, in the 4 years, has it been 4 years since you and I talked?
It's crazy. Yeah.
Social media has kind of exploded.
Yeah.
And so now I do have more of kind of a two-way back and forth dialogue with people who might listen to me on the radio but who I've never met in person that I didn't have when you and I first talked. So that's
right.
Fun because I can go on Twitter and say something like, oh my God, I almost made a terrible mistake on the air that I never would have lived down today. Everybody, please note, the show Homeland is on Showtime, not on HBO. Before, I wasn't able to share those sorts of, you know, brain-numbingly boring details with the 0.01% of NPR listeners who might actually be interested in hearing them. Now I feel very gratified that 0.01% of people who want to hear it can hear all the little, you know, mundane behind-the-scenes stuff I want to share.
I don't know. That's kind of a big one. That's a big correction.
Oh, if it had gone on the air, it would have been a huge correction. I was deeply indebted to the All Things Considered producer who called me moments before airtime and said, actually, Homeland is on Showtime. Oh, which I know. I mean, I watched Homeland. But, it's, you know, these things somehow slip by.
Now, how gay-friendly or just gay-present is the White House briefing room?
oh, there are a lot of gays at the White House.
Yeah.
I mean, the briefing room and also the White House staff. And frankly, that's a bipartisan thing. I have a lot of gay friends who worked in the Bush White House and who worked for Republicans in Congress. Washington is full of gays.
Nice.
Whether it's at NPR or at the White House or just walking down the street.
They're just all over the place.
I would think that they were multiplying, except I happen to know that's not biologically possible.
It's a proven fact, one could argue.
I've been told. I haven't proven it myself, but I...
Keep trying, Ari. You got to keep trying.
I stopped just short of that.
Well, one of the things that Netta and I commiserate on often, and something that we decided on in her last appearance, she was on the show a few weeks ago, we decided, the two of us, this never happens to you, Ari Shapiro, was
You talked about me with Netta on the show? I'm so flattered.
3 weeks ago, we talked about you.
3 weeks ago, my ears were indeed burning.
We decided, again, antibiotics, clear that up, but we decided... We decided that our experiences of recording an interview only to get back to the studio and find out that it has disappeared, we both decided that has never happened to you.
Oh, my God. It happened the very first time. In fact, it wasn't just getting back to the studio and finding out the interview that I recorded disappeared. The very first day I was doing a national story for NPR, so excited and nervous. It was like a two-day reporting project. At the end of day one, I wrote almost the entire story, leaving one little hole for the quote from the press conference that I was going to record on day two. I showed up at the press conference the morning of day two and promptly deleted all of the audio I recorded on day one. And I wanted to just dig a hole and crawl into it. And, like, I literally imagined getting on a train, going out of town, and never coming back. Somehow I managed to recover from it.
Oh, no. Yes, that happens. We decided the two things that happened to us that never happened to you were technical difficulties. And now I'm wondering if perhaps we were wrong and you do have bad hair days.
Yeah. Just ask my husband.
So you had the opportunity to be on the campaign trail. You saw, I would assume, parts of the country you had never seen before.
Oh, yeah, it was amazing. I mean, covering the campaign was really a much more enjoyable experience than I ever expected it to be, mostly because I just got to see the country in a completely different way. And there were so many surprising, memorable places. I mean, I remember the town of Elko, Nevada, which was hundreds of miles in the middle of nowhere from anything. And, you know, Nevada is like one of the states with the worst unemployment, foreclosures, personal bankruptcies. But Elko is a gold mining town, and so it has like 3% unemployment, not enough houses for all the people who want to buy. Everybody's making six figures, and they know it could dry up overnight if the price of gold drops. There were just countless stories like that of places I never would have seen, people I never would have had the chance to talk to, experiences I never would have had if I hadn't had the chance to be on the campaign trail.
Any bizarre gay bars that you were able to visit?
Amazing gay bars in the middle of nowhere. I mean, like tiny towns in Ohio where I would find a drag show on a Tuesday night to rival some big cities I'd been in on weekends. Unbelievable.
Yeah,
like Jacksonville, Florida, I remember. I'm sure the gays in these towns are not patting themselves on the back for the caliber of their gay bars. But I am patting those towns on the back for the caliber of their gay bars. Very, very impressive.
Look at that. See, we can rival those drag shows there in D.C. Because I hear they do have some nice drag shows there in Washington, D.C.
Yeah, you know, I think the big drag show in D.C. is on Friday night at a club called Town. That tends not to be my scene. I have great respect for my sisters in drag, but I'm not a regular.
Gotcha. Has there ever been an Ari Shapiro in drag evening?
There has never been an Ari Shapiro in drag evening. I will confess in high school to having gone to the Rocky Horror Picture Show with friends in drag.
There you go.
But that's a different kind of thing. You know,
it's a whole different
really
thing.
Like a drag show. That's more like a costume.
It's a whole different thing. All right. So you're covering the White House. Are you just there every single day now?
No, there are three of us who cover the White House. Me, Scott Horsley, and Mara Liasson. And we alternate weeks. So every week, one of us will be in the White House pretty much all day. And that week, our job is to just do today the president said, today the president did. And then the other 2 weeks, we can sort of take a step back and do bigger picture stories, which is great because otherwise you're just like spritzing on the treadmill the whole time trying to keep up.
Right. Any big stories that you're covering on your off weeks that we should know about and keep our eyes out for?
Well, you know, looking ahead, it's a lot of focus on President Obama's second-term national security team, sort of Chuck Hagel, John Kerry, John Brennan, to run the State Department, the Defense Department, and the CIA, kind of looking at what that says about the future of war, that you've got these two guys who fought in Vietnam and kind of know the cost of a big, expensive, you know, ground war. And then one guy, John Brennan, who runs CIA, who kind of created the drone program as we know it. And so the idea being that the future of war is going to be these secret, small footprint, unmanned devices rather than, you know, hundreds, thousands of troops going into a country.
Crazy. Wow. That's going to be, that's a whole new world. It's a whole new world, Ari Shapiro.
Whole new world. As the Little Mermaid sang.
And what everybody wants to know, when will Ari Shapiro be on Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me?
You know, the truth is I'm a little intimidated to be on Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me. There are some really witty people there, and I'm a little afraid of my ability to keep up. That said, if they ask, I would accept. But I'm not knocking on their door.
Okay. Well, I think similar to the Betty White on SNL thing, we can get Ari Shapiro there on Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me.
The fact that you compared me to Betty White just now kind of made my week.
Ari, I'm living in Vermont. You are our Betty White.
Oh, well, I'm the Betty White of Vermont. That's amazing. That's I need a little button that says the Betty White of Vermont.
It's a resume builder. When you go out to dinner tonight, you're going to tell people, yeah, that's great. You should probably pay, though, because I'm the Betty White of Vermont.
Because I'm the Betty White of Vermont.
Well, seriously, in all seriousness, Ari, you were on our sixth episode, and things were going really well, and then you were on our episode, and I truly have said this countless times on the show over the past 4+ years, that having your name on our show actually opened just a ton of doors for us to get even more guests and to develop our show, and really challenged us to be as professional as we could possibly be in what it is that we're trying to do here. And we have credited you nonstop for that, and we're just so appreciative for the contribution that you've made to our show.
Thank you so much, and congratulations on your anniversary. 200 episodes is no small thing.
Well, thank you.
I'm happy to be able to come back and join you again.
Well, can I get you to do the tagline at the end? The only two words that you need to know, and you'll know exactly where they're coming, the only two words you need to say, sir, are so gay. Will you do that for us?
Happily.
All right. You'll know when it comes. Folks, okay. That wraps things up for our 200th episode of This Show Is So Gay. Thank you guys so much for listening. Thanks to Susan Warner, who was on at the top of the show, and Liz Damon, who returned to the show. Of course, to Ari Shapiro, who's on the air with us right now. Get out there, folks. Go do some incredible things. Use your voice the way you know how to use it to make a difference in this world and raise up the voices of your LGBT brothers and sisters. And of course, while you're out there in the world doing great things, remember, why be gay when you can be
so gay?
When I closed my eyes so I would not see, my Lord did trouble me. When I let things stand that should not be, my Lord did trouble me. When I held my head too high, too proud, my Lord did trouble me. When I raised my voice too little, too loud, my Lord did trouble me. Did trouble me with a word or a sign, with the ringing of the bell the back of my mind. Did trouble me, did stir my soul, for to make me human, to make me whole. When I slept too long, slept too deep,
my Lord did trouble me.
Put a worrisome vision into my sleep,
my Lord did trouble me.
When I held myself away and apart,
my Lord did trouble me.
And the tears of my brother did move my heart,
my Lord did trouble me.
Did trouble me with a word or a sign.